Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Mark Dunley, the Green Party's candidate for New York State Comptroller. Mark is a graduate of RPI and Albany Law School, and he's been a longtime executive director of Hunger Action Network of New York State. Mark has also written a book, Madam President, the unauthorized biography of the first Green Party president. Welcome, Mark Dunley.
Well, thank you, Alan. Glad to be on WAMC.
Okay, so I guess the first question, which I'm going to ask you, and you're not going to tell me the truth about, but I'm going to ask you, can you win?
Probably not. This is not a race designed to, well, depends how you define win. I define win as if I can convince Tom DiNapoli, the present state controller, who's 25 points ahead in the poll or something, to divest the state pension fund from fossil fuels. I have been coordinating that campaign for the last 5 years at 350.org, managed to get earlier this year New York City to agree to divest, managed to get 1,000 institutions worldwide with $7.2 trillion to divest from fossil fuels, but have not been able to manage to convince Tom DiNapoli, who actually has become a national spokesperson for the fossil fuel industry with respect to his opposition to divestment. So I thought this would be a good opportunity, but I also, having worked for many years with the Fiscal Policy Institute and with the state budget, are also very concerned about some of the fiscal transparency and accountability issues.
Well, Mark Dunley, that's an interesting point. I've asked Tom DiNapoli about this many times. His response has always been, my job as controller is to bring the best return on our investments as I possibly can, and it is not to make political statements like that. But I think, frankly, I got to be honest with you, I think you're being a little unfair to say he's a national spokesman for the fossil fuel industry.
Well, they profile them these days in their annual report as being the responsible voice. But I am very concerned about the fiscal question. Besides, I think it's morally wrong for the state to continue to invest in an industry which is, contributing to the destruction of the planet. Tom Zanzillo, who you may remember, was the acting state controller between when Hevesy was forced to resign and the legislature appointed DiNapoli, has been quite outspoken about the need to divest while the fossil fuel still has some value. He points out for the last 4 or 5 years, the fossil fuels have been the worst performing sector of the stock market. And in fact, a new report out a couple of weeks ago by an investment firm showed that if New York State had divested 10 years ago, the state pension fund would have about an extra $22 billion, which averages about $20,000 for each of the 1.1 million beneficiaries. So it's a bad financial decision, in my opinion, for Mr. DiNapoli, to oppose divestment. He talks about shareholder advocacy. We have a 50-year history of that. Never really been effective. And since I've been involved in the campaign, I've discovered that not only are these shareholder resolutions only advisory, they cannot actually deal with the core part of the business. So you can pass a resolution to increase the number of women on the board of directors, which is good, but you cannot even introduce a resolution, say, to keep 80% of the fossil fuels in the ground.
Mark, I wanted to ask you about this. New York State finances, New York is deeply in debt, potentially $17.9 billion. Now, it is true that I've had reservations about the gubernatorial actions of our present governor in New York. Actually, I live in Massachusetts, but of Andrew Cuomo. And it seems to me he's very good at announcing huge projects, and they're going to cost a lot of money. But I think it's fair to say he won't be around when we have to pay off the bills.
Well, actually, the debt is much higher if you throw in the public authorities. I think it runs about $56 billion or so. Now,
wait a second. Stop and explain the public authorities for the few who may not understand how we do it in New York State.
Well, this was a creation of Robert Moses in order to evade the state constitutional requirement that all public debt of the state be approved by the taxpayers. So they created these quasi-government agencies called authorities, which still pretty much pledge the full faith and credit of the state when they incur the debt, but they did not have to go out and get permission. Now, one of the things I did when I was one of the co-founders of NYPIRG, and as a law student for them, I wrote a law that gave taxpayers the right to sue for illegal expenditure of taxpayer funds. The first lawsuit we filed under that was to challenge the financing of the Empire State Plaza. Because you probably remember Erastus Coyne and decided. Right. So he decided
it was an interesting deal.
Right.
Stop and explain just how interesting it was. It had to do with the county and the city and the state.
Correct. So Erastus Coyne, who is the mayor for, 45 years or something, got the county, which he technically had nothing to do with, to basically build the Empire State Plaza. It got a few things he wanted, like the skating rink and the Performance Arts Center, the Egg. And then he leased it to the state, and that way Nelson Rockefeller, the governor at that point, could not have to go and get the public's permission to do the debt, and then Coyne and get to appoint all the patronage positions for, like, the maintenance workers and the low-level staff that still, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year job. So we sued on that, saying that it was an illegal circumvention of the state constitution, and unfortunately we've lost. But
let's go back for one second. Because it's a point you skipped over, you said it, but I want everybody to understand that in order for the state to take on that kind of debt, they would have had to go to the people and ask for a positive vote, right?
That is correct.
And this way they got around that.
Right. And almost all the authority debt is designed to get around that public vote. About the only thing I can recollect in recent years that we voted on, I think we voted on one or two environmental bonds and maybe some labor, job type of bonds. I think all that debt should, in fact, be put on the table. I think the authorities should be required to follow the same procurement laws, transparency laws, open government laws that the other state agencies. And actually, that's something that Tom DiNapoli agrees with. But unfortunately, he's not been able to get the legislature to pass the laws that he wants. I do think he perhaps could fight a little bit harder for it. But actually, in a lot of the fiscal reforms, Tom and I, pretty much agree. As I said, I had worked for 25, 30 years with the Hunger Action Network. We were very involved with the Fiscal Policy Institute. And so a lot of the reforms we put together, say, around curbing the abuses in the economic development program were things that Tom over the years has been willing to pick up and introduce and try to push. And some success, but not enough.
I think the controller's relationship to the legislature is one that is worthy of a little bit more discussion here. Now, these people in the legislature, and it certainly includes the present governor, Andrew Cuomo, have been loath to give Tom DiNapoli the auditing powers which he deserves and which he had once, which they took away from him. What's that all about?
Well, right before the governor went ahead with his Buffalo Billion deal, which his chief economic development person somehow, unbeknownst to the governor, rigged the bid and was convicted recently of $750 million, he got the legislature to remove the oversight of those particular contracts with SUNY and CUNY from the state controller. So that was wrong. And I do think one thing the controller should do is any contract being given to a donor that has made a donation to the governor or the controller or any of the key political leaders should be subject to additional scrutiny. Now, you probably remember that the games that go on in Albany after the governor got the IDC, the Independent Democratic Conference, to rejoin the Senate Democrats, the Senate Republicans decided to reward the governor for that action by passing a bill to restore the oversight of those contracts to the state controller. Even though it was an assembly bill, the Speaker of the Assembly would not allow the bill to come for a vote because he was trying to protect the governor. And I thought Tom should have really raised Cain on that one and said, wait a moment, this is a good government stuff. It's an assembly bill. Why are we now, holding off on it?
So let me stop you there, Mark, because it was interesting. They took away these powers from the controller, and the governor then wanted to give them, basically went under intense criticism, to somebody that worked for him.
Yes, I think we have a governor, frankly, who presides over corruption. I think USA Today, put out a story about the $100 million he has raised so far from donors since he was elected governor. And, a fairly high percentage of them have received state contracts. Of course, the Times Union recently has been looking at the Crystal Run situation where, they got, I think, $25 million or so of state contracts after they began the construction on the project, which is quite unusual. And they had put
When you say unusual, what do you really mean?
Well, it was very clearly that it was, to most of us, a reward for making $400,000 of contributions. I think a series of people gave $25,000 each. I guess there's been some acknowledgement that what they did was illegal, and now the federal government, the United States Attorney, and the FBI apparently is investigating how corrupted it went. But, I mean, you had Joe Papoco, who is the governor's top aide, extracting money related to CPV and some other development projects.
And what's CPV?
CPV is a power plant that was built down in Orange County. Actually pretty incredible. This plant will account for 10% of the state's carbon footprint. And so it's a really massive, you know, emitter of various carbon greenhouse gas emissions. So when you have the governor, for instance, saying let's cut electricity emissions 50% by 2030 or 40% emissions, and yet you're then building all these type of power. So in any case, Prococo, who is his top aide, got convicted of that, plus another development that took place in Syracuse. I think the reality is it's rampant. There have been 50 state officials who've been forced to resign or been indicted since 2000. Pretty much the entire leadership of the state assembly and the Senate, probably one or two exceptions, have been convicted in recent year. And the governor,
yes, but not on the basis of all the chicanery you're talking about. In other words, these guys, Shelley Silver and Dean Skelos, they were convicted for other things.
But they were convicted of political corruption, though.
Yes, that's
they
true.
They were basically taking different type of, you know, kickbacks.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of things that we would have found illegal or outrageous prior to Watergate are now enshrined in the law. And an old friend of mine, Al Lewis, used to run around and say, what is a campaign contribution? And he would spell out, you know, bribery. It's become a legal form of bribery. And I think the controller, you know, needs to be mindful of that when he's, you know, doing the audits, or I shouldn't say audits, a pre-approval of these contracts, is to ask additional questions when you see that somebody's made campaign contribution.
And we're talking to Mark Dunley, the Green Party candidate for New York State Controller. Okay, so Mark, you are a guy who has always been very concerned. You and your wonderful wife, Judith Enck, who is a great friend of the station's, have talked a lot about the environment. So what can the controller actually do to help us with the environment?
Well, as I said, I mean, the one thing we've been pushing for is to get the state to divest from fossil fuels, which we've talked about. An interesting thing, I recently met with Leisha Barnett, who's now the head of NYSERDA, runs the state energy, you know, operations for the governor. And one of the things she mentioned was that in Europe, it's actually been the public pension funds which have financed the construction of the offshore wind industry. I said, well, that's very interesting because we love to see New York State do that. Literally, the area off of Long Island in New York City is considered the Saudi Arabia of offshore wind.
So let me get this straight. The party, or you, are for the construction of these offshore windmills?
Yes, very strongly in favor. Actually, one of our party co-chairs met a couple years ago with Governor Cuomo and explained to him, because he was concerned at that point that the wind turbines might be too close to the land and it would be scenic stuff. And she said, no, we're building them now 10, 12 miles out. And he turned to Basil Sagos, who was in the room, and said, is the Green Party right? Are we building them that far out? And yeah, they're right. And he said, oh, maybe we should build more of them then if they're going to be that far out. So, you know, we are trying for 100% by 2030 based on this report Mark Jacobson did, 100% clean energy by 2030. And in that report, 40% of the energy in the state would come from offshore wind. I think 10% from onshore wind, and then about 37% from solar. I do think one of the problems we have in New York State right now is almost impossible to site utility scale renewables. And I think one of the—
Why is that?
It's always local.
I'm out there on Fire Island.
Right.
Place I love and grew up on. I'm looking out into the ocean. I don't see those windmills, do I?
Right. We haven't had the offshore wind fight yet because we haven't done any. We're just about starting that. But onshore wind.
Right. Okay. Theoretically, I'm looking out into the ocean. Offshore, I would not see them.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, you might see a little blimp if you had binoculars. Uh-huh. But if they're, you know, 300 feet high, but they're 10 miles out, your eyesight might be better than mine. You might catch them out there. It's going to be hardly noticeable. One of the things we have said is, why not have the state, you know, we're a bunch of eco-socialists, why not have the state do public ownership of some of these things? We have 57, 58 public utilities right now in New York State, including Green Island. And just say to these towns and cities, if you want the economic development from renewable energy, we will bring it to your community. What you have to do is you have to cite it. So you decide where you want it and then invite us in and we'll construct it. Because what happens is the developers run around and they look for the nice flat piece of land that they can easily develop, which is usually really good farmland, and then that leads to people who object to it. But if this town was involved or the village and said, we want to build a couple wind turbines or wind farm in town, where do people want it? Then they can fight that out locally, figure out what's the best place, and then have somebody come in and finance it.
Okay, now Mark Dunley, Green Party candidate for controller, one of your platform things is to do a state carbon tax. What's that?
Well, a state carbon tax, you know, we propose, actually we have legislation I drafted 3 years ago. Assembly member Kevin Cahill has been the lead sponsor, used to be chair of the Assembly Energy Committee. So it starts off at about, I think, $40 a ton, maybe $35 a ton. That increases $15 a year. The idea is that those who are emitting greenhouse gases, carbon emissions that are contributing to climate change should have to pay for the damage that they're causing. And then the debate tends to be over what do you do with the revenues. We rebate 60% of the revenues to low and moderate income people to try to hold them harmless because energy taxes tend to be regressive. It's hardest on low and moderate income people. And then the last 40%, we invest in renewable energy, mass transit, and other things that contribute to climate change. Surprisingly, well, a majority of Americans support a carbon tax. Surprisingly, a majority of Republicans in previous polls, I think it's now 49% among Republicans, they support it if the revenue is used to pay for renewable energy. They have less support if the revenue is 100% rebated. So it's actually surprising to me that the Republicans support a carbon tax if the money goes towards renewable energy. But the idea behind a carbon tax is that if you actually made those who burn fossil fuels reflect the cost of society in the price, that will make renewable energy cheaper comparatively and accelerate the transition. I mean, already renewable energy is becoming cheaper than and fossil fuels, even natural gas. But, you know, you increase that price difference, the market takes over and drives the transition to renewable energy.
Okay, now, Mark Dunley, I only have 7 minutes left, and I got a lot of questions I want to ask you, so keep them short.
Okay.
Okay, let's talk about the M word, marijuana, the legalization of marijuana in New York. What do you think?
We've advocated for the legalization for decades. Actually, when I was at NYPIRG, because we were having students arrested in Syracuse, NYPIRG passed a law to decriminalize the small possession of marijuana 40 years ago. And yet somehow New York State, particularly New York City, is the marijuana arrest capital of the world. I don't know how we allow the police to violate the law that we passed 40 years ago. And we should, you know, tax it, regulate it like we do alcohol, and use the revenues and support education. You know, we don't want kids using it. You don't want people using it when they're driving or operating equipment or things of that nature.
How do you stop that?
Hey, I don't know if you do stop it. Honestly, you criminalize it when they do that. But I think education and, you know, I grew up with the idea that, for instance, that you would drink and drive is just something that always terrified me. Mm-hmm. The idea that I would get behind the car and cause an accident that would harm something, just not something I'll even go close to.
Commendable. All right. Okay, and a gateway drug?
Marijuana?
Yeah.
Not that it leads to, you know, use of harder drugs or stuff like that. So I would not say it's a gateway drug.
Okay.
It has less of a problem than both alcohol and tobacco in terms of its public health impact. And we've decided to regulate the use of those two. And I think marijuana should be treated the same way. And of course, it's the whole racial discrimination thing. I mean, reality is it's been legal for most white people for years or decades.
Sure.
But, you know, it's used to, you know, target particularly young, you know, African-American males.
Agreed. Okay, so here's a controversial one that you say you want to do, and that's a public bank. Let's go back in American history. What do you think?
Well, of course, there is a public bank in America, North Dakota. It was the most profitable bank in the United States. And the idea is to provide, you know...
In New York.
Well, in New York, to provide financing to community projects, small businesses that might not otherwise be able to get funding at a reasonable rate from, you know, banks and
commercial banks.
Commercial
and I'm sure the commercial, Mark Dunley, I'm sure the commercial banks are all for this idea.
Well, that's why we don't have it, because we're basically trying to take their profits away. But for instance, it would help local governments, because they could then say the school district or the local government, if they had to go borrow money, they could borrow from the bank and probably shave a couple interest points off. Believe it or not, I'm actually fiscally conservative when it comes to high taxes. I'm probably the only former elected official who can say that every year I was in government, I managed to cut taxes. I don't know anybody else that says that. And speaking of corruption, one of the things I did was I put the town insurance contract out for bid.
And that town was?
Post-and-Kill.
Okay.
Suddenly everybody's screaming. Long story, the county Democratic chair went to federal prison for 2 years for being an unnamed co-insurer on our town insurance contract and then also on the Rensselaer County insurance contract.
Interesting. Okay. So, of course, being a Green and being a progressive, you want a single-payer health care law. Is there a way to do that in just New York?
Yes. I actually co-founded Single Payer New York, and I will personally take credit for revitalizing the single payer movement in New York State when I was with Hunger Action Network. Convinced Dick Gottfried, chair of the Assembly Health Committee, who had been an advocate for decades, that in fact there was a base of support and he should try again. And we now passed it 3 or 4 years in a row. Would it be better to do it at the federal? In the Assembly, yes. Not in the Senate, though almost a majority of the senators have been a co-sponsor of the bill, but have never been able to get a vote.
But if this year the Senate goes Democratic, do you think that there's a chance that you'll see your bill finally? Or will the other guys in the Assembly, who have always said they were for it, do the usual thing, take tail and run?
I share some of your cynicism, because we saw that in California. Every year when Arnold Schwarzenegger was governor, they passed a single-payer bill through the legislature so that the governor would veto it and they could campaign against them. Once Jerry Brown became governor, for some reason we could no longer get the bill out of committee in the California state legislature. Governor Cuomo has said he supports single-payer health care, though he would prefer it at the national level. You know, I don't think we're getting it with Trump as president.
Take 1 minute on immigration.
We support, the right of immigrants. We support, the Dream Act. You know, there should be a pathway to citizenship.
Okay.
We support Albany being a sanctuary city. You know, I lived in New York City for the last 7 years. I mean, it's an immigrant city, and it's your coworkers. It's the people who you meet at businesses. And New York State in particular is an immigrant state.
Revenue sharing.
Oh, I support restoring Section 54 of the state finance law, which used to require 8% of state revenues to go to local governments. I fought for that when I was on my town board. Right now it's 0.4%. I would repeal the tax cap, which is a bumper sticker, which has done nothing.
This is Cuomo's 2% tax cap.
Right, which the controller is responsible for monitoring compliance with. So I think the next controller should stand up and say, this is not working. Revenue sharing would. If you want to tie it into, we increase revenue sharing, you have to decrease your local property taxes by a certain percentage, that's fine. Rockefeller started the revenue sharing because he realized that communities have only the property tax and sales tax to raise revenue, that it impacts upon low and moderate income people. The state has a bigger way to raise revenues.
We are out of time. It's unfortunate because Mark Dunleavy has a lot to say. He is the Green Party candidate for New York State Comptroller. Mark, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you, Alan.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.